MHD generator, all connected by sturdy-looking piping and surrounded by crates of various powdered metals and bins of soot. Pure carbon dust. Dan, Cardenas, and three of her nanotechnicians stood in a group, encased in their spacesuits, watching the results of the nanomachines' ceaseless work. It was daylight outside, Dan knew. Through the open sides of the factory, he saw the brilliant sunlight glaring harshly against the barren lunar landscape. But inside the factory, with its curved roof cutting off the glow from the sun and Earth, the components of the fusion system looked dark and dull, like the unpolished diamond that they were. "We start on the pumps next," Cardenas said, "as soon as the MHD channel is finished. And then the rocket nozzles." Dan heard an edge in her voice. He did not like being out on the surface. Despite all her years of living on the moon, or maybe because of them, being outside bothered her. Cellini's factories were built out on the moon's surface, exposed to the vacuum of space, almost completely automated or run remotely by operators safe in control centers underground. "You okay, Chris?" he asked.
"I'd feel better downstairs," she answered, frankly.
"Okay, then, let's go. I'm sorry I dragged you out here. I just wanted to see for myself how we're doing."
"It's all right," she said,
but she turned and started toward the airlock hatch and the tractor that had carried them to the factory.
"I know that the vacuum out here is great for industrial processing," she said, apologizing. "It just scares the bejesus out of me."
"Even buttoned up nice and cozy in the spacesuit?" Dan asked, walking across the factory floor alongside her.
"Maybe it's the suit," she said. "Maybe I'm a closet claustrophobe."
Contamination was something that flatlanders from Earth took for granted. Living on a planet teeming with life, from bacteria to whales, thick with pollution from human and natural sources, and deep within a turbulent atmosphere that transports spores, dust, pollen, smog, moisture, and other contaminants everywhere, cleanliness for Earthsiders was a matter of degree. That was why Dan, with his immune system weakened by the radiation doses he'd been exposed to in space, wore filter plugs and sanitary masks when he was on Earth. In the hard vacuum of the lunar surface, 1,000 times better than the vacuum of low Earth orbit, not only was the environment clean of external pollution sources, the contaminants inside most materials could be removed virtually for free. Microscopic gas bubbles trapped inside metals percolated out of the metal's crystal structure and boiled off into the void. Thus, Cellini's factories were out on the lunar surface, open to the purifying vacuum of the moon. "We don't need to go through the car wash again," Dan said, touching the arm of Cardenas' suit. "We can go straight to the tractor." He walked around the bulky airlock and hopped off the concrete slab that formed the factory floor, dropping in lunar slow motion 3 meters to the regolith. His boots puffed up a little cloud of dust that floated lazily up halfway to his knees. Cardenas came to the lip of the slab, hesitated, then jumped down to where Dan waited for her. Like all the lunar factories, this one was built on a thick concrete platform to keep the factory floor above the dusty ground. With no winds, there was little danger of contaminants blowing in from the outside. A curving dome of honeycomb lunar aluminum protected the factory from the constant infall of micrometeoroids and the hard radiation from the sun in deep space. The most worrisome source of pollution came from the humans who occasionally entered the factories, even though they had to wear spacesuits. Before they were allowed onto the factory floor, Dan and the others had to go through the car wash, a special airlock equipped with electrostatic scrubbers and special powdered detergents that removed the traces of oil, perspiration, and other microscopic contaminants that clung to the spacesuit's outer surfaces. As the tractor slowly trundled back to Cellini's main airlock, Dan thought about what he had just seen. Before his eyes, the MHD channel was growing. Slowly, he admitted, but it was visibly getting longer as the virus-sized nanomachines took carbon and other atoms from the supply bins and locked them into place,
like kids building a Tinker Toy City. How much longer? He asked, into the microphone built into his helmet. Cardenas, sitting beside him, understood his question. 3 weeks, if they go as programmed.
3 weeks?
Dan blurted. Looks like they're almost finished now. They've still got to finish the MHD channel, which is a pretty tricky piece of work. High current density electrodes, superconducting magnets and all. Then comes the pumps, which is no bed of roses, and finally the rocket nozzles, which are also complex. Buckyball microtubes carrying cryogenic hydrogen running a few centimeters away from a 10,000-degree plasma flow. Then there's...
Okay, okay, Dan said, throwing up his gloved hands.
3 weeks.
That's the schedule.
Dan knew the schedule. He had been hoping for better news from Cardenas. Over the past 6 weeks, his lawyers had hammered out the details of the new Star Power Limited partnership. Humphreys' lawyers had niggled over every detail while Cellini's legal staff had breezed through the negotiation with little more than a cursory examination of the agreement, thanks largely to Doug Stabinger's prodding. So now, it was all in place. Dan had the funding to make the fusion rocket a reality, and he still had control of Astro Manufacturing. Astro was staggering financially, but Dan calculated that the company could hold together until the profits from the fusion system started rolling in. Still, he constantly pushed Cardenas to go faster. It was going to be a tight race. Astro had already started construction of its final solar power satellite. When that one's finished, Dan knew, we go sailing over the disaster curve. No new space construction contract in sight.
Can't this buggy go any faster? Cardenas asked, testily.
Full throttle, ma'am, said the imperturbable technician at the controls. To take her mind off her fears of being out in the open, Dan asked her, did you see this morning's news from Earthside?
The food riots in Delhi?
Yeah, I saw it. They're starving, Chris. If the monsoon fails again this year, there's going to be a monster famine, and it'll spread a long way.
Not much we can do about, Cardenas said.
Not yet, Dan muttered. They got themselves into this mess, she said tightly, breathing like hamsters. She's really bitter, Dan thought. I wonder how she'd feel if her husband and kids had decided to stay on the moon with her. With a sigh, he admitted she's got plenty to be bitter about. Big George was waiting for Dan in his private office, sitting on the sofa, a sheaf of printouts scattered across the coffee table.
What's all this? Dan asked, sitting in the chair at the end of the coffee table.
When George sat on the couch, there really wasn't much room for anyone else. Stuff I lifted from Humphreys' files, George said, his red-bearded face wrinkled with worry.
He's out for your bowls, you know.
I know. Tapping a blunt finger on the pile of printouts, George said, he's buying every share of Astro stock he can get his hands on. Quietly. No green mile, no big fuss, but he's pushing his brokers to buy at any price.
Great,
Dan grunted. Maybe the damn stock will go up a little. George grinned. That'd be good. Been in free fall long enough. You're not thinking of selling, are you? With a laugh, George replied, the amount I've got wouldn't make any difference one way or the other. Dan was not amused. If you ever do want to sell, you come to me first, understand? I'll buy at the market price. Humphreys is buying at 2 points above the fucking market price.
Is he?
In some cases, where big blocks of stock are involved.
Son of a bitch, Dan said fervently, pronouncing each word distinctly. He knows I don't have the cash to buy out the minor stockholders.
It's not all that bad, George said. I did a calculation. At the rate he's acquiring Astro shares, it'll take him 2 years to buy up a majority position. Dan stared off into space, thinking hard. 2 years. We could be making profits from the asteroid belt by then.
Should be, if everything goes right.
And if it doesn't go right? Dan shrugged. Then Humphreys will take control of Astro and throw me out on my butt. I'll take his head off his fucking shoulders first.
George growled. A lovely scent.